Hi, I'm Willow Belden, and you're listening to Out There, the podcast that explores big questions through intimate stories in the outdoors. Mother's Day is coming up soon, and for those of us who have lost our mothers, it can be a tough time. It's a time when you have so much love you want to give away, and no one to give it to. You watch your friends writing cards, mailing packages, taking their mothers out to brunch. You see others going on hikes or playing in the park with their own little ones in tow. You help new fathers figure out what to give their wives for their first ever Mother's Day. And you wish so acutely that you could hug your mom just once more and tell her thank you. Today's story comes to us from a woman who lost her mother much too early. As you might imagine, her mom's death left a gaping hole in her life. But this story isn't about that, at least not really. Instead, it's about the things we can learn about our loved ones long after they're gone, about the things we can gain from them even in their absence, about following in their footsteps and continuing conversations we thought had forever ended. I'll let Camille Van Canel take it from here.
Growing up, I always wondered whether my mother had thrown away her life. I saw her as a pretty stereotypical homemaker, a stay-at-home mom carting us around to soccer games and filling her time with arts and crafts and cooking clubs. She seemed satisfied enough, but I wanted more for her. Her life seemed so constraining, so devoid of excitement and adventure. I wanted my life to be different. My father had climbed the Himalayas, and he had what seemed like a fulfilling job at a promising startup. That's what I wanted to copy. Throughout high school, I spent my time quietly rebelling against my mom. I dreamed of becoming a swashbuckling foreign reporter. I led my school magazine. I started researching colleges far from home. I was excited to leave the family nest and begin my very own life as an adult. But then, one day in the middle of college application season, things changed. My mom went to the hospital for shoulder pain. A couple days later, she sat my sisters and me down to tell us she had received a diagnosis of pancreatic cancer. I felt numb. "I'm going to die from this," she told us. It was like someone was changing the rules of the game on me and on my mom. I was mad, and I was terrified. After the diagnosis, my parents decided to move back to their home country, Switzerland, to be near family and friends. Instead of rejoicing at graduation and driving off to college with my peers, I found myself in a daze, boarding a plane to Europe to help care for my little sister and my mom. She started chemotherapy immediately. I caught her looking at wigs. At the same time, I was enjoying my first intimate adult moments with her. Once, we drove to a frozen river nearby to test the ice, just the two of us. She told me she had once gotten pulled over by the police at this exact same spot in the forest during a rowdy ride back from a bachelorette party. I laughed, disbelieving. My mom had taken care to always appear so prim to me. She grew weaker and weaker, so we moved from hiking to playing board games. She passed away less than 3 years after the diagnosis, at 49. The window facing her bed showed our beloved lake and Alps. I was 18. I felt so angry her path had been cut short in such a painful and unfair way. She was supposed to have much more time. She had planned girls' trips to southern France and yoga retreats around the world with friends, and all that would now go unlived. Over the next few days, I sorted through her personal things and wrote a eulogy, and I realized I knew only so much about her. What was her childhood like? Why had she decided to become a mother? Was she happy? Those questions about my mom continued to haunt me over the next several years. I moved a couple times, went to school, graduated, started a job. I wanted female guidance. I was scared of embarking on a life without purpose. Had my mother ever felt that? How had she navigated it? Then, on the 5-year anniversary of her death, something happened that would redefine how I saw my mother and set me on a path to reconnecting with her in a way I had never really imagined. It started when my mom's grandmother passed away, and I took it upon myself to sort through old family stuff in our dusty attic in Switzerland. I found an ice axe and a helmet from my dad's old climbing days. I put on the helmet and dug into the jumbled piles of photo albums and clothes and knickknacks. And then, in all the clutter, something caught my eye. A dozen little notebooks. I opened one, and immediately I recognized my mom's loose cursive. I had to sit down. These were journals and letters from when my mom was my age, exactly. She was 23 and traveling South America for months on end. I had only known the vague outlines of her travels as a young woman. She often traveled with her cousin, and the previous year, the same cousin had taken me to Bolivia to meet some of their old friends from 30 years ago. My mom hovered like a ghost in all of our conversations. And now, here she was, in her own words. The journals whisked me to Bolivia, Peru, Argentina, Ecuador, Brazil. My mom detailed bumpy bus rides and cold showers with cheery resilience. Once, someone robbed her of her money and documents in a square in Quito, but her many local friends rallied to help her. She took impromptu detours without knowing where she'd sleep. She carefully noted the home addresses of fellow travelers. She listed the names of these men, and I realized these were her romantic entanglements. I blushed, impressed, knowing how hard it was at 23 to fall into and out of love on the go. Her musings on loneliness and novelty glowed with the earnestness of a 20-something. "I think life is like a journey," she wrote. "An adventure we go along where we meet different people and swap stories." And later, on one of her plane rides back home, she continued, "I had said I was going to settle down, but the closer I get to the return, the more I keep thinking about setting off to another corner of the world." "Exactly," I thought. In those pages, I met a woman I never knew. She was free-spirited, unafraid, hungry, fully in charge of her own life. All the things I hoped to be myself. I went through her life again. 6 years after she wrote those journals, she would fall pregnant with me, then uproot her life to a foreign country and build a new community from scratch. What before I had seen as resignation to a life of homemaking, now I saw his bravery and selflessness in the name of her family, of her daughters, of me. And I had never thanked her properly. I wanted to know more. More about her life at my age. More about the parts of her she never shared with me. I figured a good way to do that might be to retrace her steps, to go to the places she had traveled. So I decided I needed to go to South America, by myself. I reached out to friends my mother had made in Ecuador. I had met them once as a child. Now they told me they had been waiting for me my whole life and assured me they would take care of me if I visited. That made this big, scary world so much smaller and sweeter. I started researching things to do. I looked to the mountains, where I've always felt most at home. I wanted to do something big for my mom, and also for myself. I was growing tired of city life, of politics, of the routine of my job. I was only 23 and felt drab. I wanted a challenge. I set my sights on Cotopaxi, an active volcano 19,000 feet high outside of Quito. It had struck me because it reminded me a little of the Matterhorn, the famous Swiss mountain. It stood alone among the high plateaus, iconic. I became obsessed. So, last December, I hopped on a plane to Ecuador, my mom's diary tucked into my purse. Her friends picked me up at the airport at 2 a.m. They housed me, fed me, and showed me around their city. I tried seeing them as my mom had, rewinding, erasing the wrinkles and the gray hair. They were musicians, and they played their Andean flutes and guitars for me as they had for her. California, de melocotones, una siacincore ensangrentada. They showed me pictures of my mom that I had never seen. Her smile is wider than I had ever seen it. In one, she's laughing at someone off camera, her head tilted, her short, dirty blonde hair falling around her face. She's so young, I exclaimed. And she looks just like me. The friends laughed. She had this joy for life that was contagious, someone said. They called her a maravilla, a marvel. Regaló mi paz y su flor pura. Regaló un clavel meditabundo para tu blanca mano de criatura. I asked one of my mom's friends, who was a mountain guide, whether he'd take me up the Cotopaxi, the volcano I was aiming for. At first, he hesitated. I was a city girl. He wasn't sure I'd make it. But he relented. He insisted we practice on the Ruku Pichincha, a smaller volcano above the city. I raced him to the top, debating gender politics as best I could in Spanish. In turn, he described the Swiss mountains he had hiked when he had visited my mother and her parents some 30 years ago. Once at the foggy summit, I wrote a little prayer on a scrap of paper and tucked it into a pile of rocks. It said, "Gracias a la montaña. Gracias a mi mamá. Thank you to the mountain. Thank you to my mom for showing me the way." It's litter, but it felt important, I told the guide apologetically. No, that's beautiful, he smiled. And he added, if we walk like this, we'll have no problem on Cotopaxi. He pointed the peak out to me in the distance, across the valley. A couple days later, we were driving in. The trees gave way to shrubs and cacti, then rocks. The clouds opened, and I saw the mountain up close. It towered over me, iron red, topped by a white cap, impossibly tall. I felt overwhelmed. Then, somehow, an hour later, I found myself on the trail, hiking up to the mountain refuge where we would try to nap. The hut keepers looked me head to toe and asked the guide, "Her?" I had a moment of doubt myself. But my friend was reassuring. "Es super fuerte. She's super strong," he told off the others. It was 1 a.m. when we set off. My flashlight lit my feet as I lifted them through the dark, testing, wary of the altitude. I counted my steps to 100, 200, 1,000. The moonlight sparkled on the glacier like a mirror of the stars in the sky. The air got thinner, and my breath became the only thing and the most important thing in the world. In, out. In, out. In, out. Right foot, left foot, right foot, rest. Again and again and again for 5 hours. I dreamed my way through the last 100 yards, my legs leaden, my ears ringing, my vision shimmering as light slowly imbued the air. And finally, I was there, crossing the summit just as the horizon blazed alive. The wind and the sun jolted my senses awake. An ocean of clouds stretched out thousands of feet below. The mountain cast a blue triangle of a shadow there. At my feet, wind had sculpted ice into lace. Sulfurous smoke rose from the crater, yellow in the sunrise. I felt awed and happy and proud. I felt vindicated. I had proven something to the men who doubted me. I had climbed faster than all of them. But it was more than that. I felt like I was vindicating my mom, to myself and to the world. My summit was her summit. I got there because I was following her footsteps. I had changed the story I told myself about her life. She had taken on all kinds of mountains. I gave her back her agency and her drive and extended it. I lived it into being again, and with it, I did something I probably could never have done just myself. Traveling and climbing, facing my fears, discovering new places and people, it all felt like a more fitting tribute to my mom than laying flowers on her grave. I came away with more questions than answers about my mom, about women, motherhood, traveling, climbing, and myself. As with most trips, there's no beautiful concluding bow to this one. But at least I know now that my relationship with my mom did not end when she died. Perhaps down the trail, I'll learn some more.
That was Camille Van Cannell. She's an environmental journalist based in Washington, D.C. Music in this episode included works by Giovanni Mera, Willie Bice Campagna, and the group Nuevo Amanecer. Before you go, I want to tell you about a new and affordable way to advertise with us. Our community classified section is a way for all of you, the out there community, to let each other know about events, books, products, etc., that you think other listeners would enjoy. If you'd like to take out an ad of your own, just head over to our website, outtherepodcast.com, and click Contact. There's a super easy form to fill out, and as soon as we hear from you, we'll be in touch about all the details. A big thank you to Jennifer Daniels and Deb and Vince Garcia for their financial contributions to Out There. If you're enjoying the show, we would love for you to make a contribution of your own. Your support enables us to pay the bills and keep the podcast coming to you 3 times a month. Just head over to outtherepodcast.com and click support. That's it for this episode. Our marketing and business development director is Alex Eggerking, and our theme music was written by Jared Arnold. Have a beautiful day, be bold, go outside, and find your dreams.